from KQED.
From the Sacramento studio of KQED Public Radio, I'm Dave Iverson. 2 years ago, the California State Park System was a mess. Budget cuts forced the system to consider closing 70 parks, and then it got worse. Turned out the Park Department was sitting on a hidden $20 million surplus, the consequence of bad management and worse accounting. Now the state's balance sheet is better, and the Parks Department has a new leader. But questions remain about California's state parks system. We'll talk with State Parks Chief Anthony Jackson and other state park leaders about the future of that system after this. From the Sacramento studio of KQED Public Radio, I'm Dave Iverson. When you run a large state agency, there are certain words you'd rather not see associated with your department in print. Words like troubled, scandal-plagued, or secret surplus. And yet all of those words were used to describe the State Department of Parks and Recreation in the year 2012. Auditors found that a combination of poor management and accounting practices had allowed the Parks Department to somehow have a $20 million surplus at the very time state budget cuts were forcing the planned closure of 70 state parks. Scandal prompted investigations, the appointment of a special commission, and the naming of a new state parks chief. So 20 months after the worst of times, where are the state parks in California today? And as important, what kind of shape are the parks in with the summer season fast approaching? Joining us to take up this subject is Anthony Jackson, the new director of the California Department of Parks and Recreation. Jackson is a retired Marine Corps general who's now been on the job for a year or so. General Jackson, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on the show.
We're happy to have you here. And joining us as well is Ken Wiseman. He's the executive director of Parks Forward, which is the state commission that's been set up to analyze and assess how the state parks are doing. Ken Wiseman, good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for your focus on parks.
And joining us from our studio in San Francisco this morning, Elizabeth Goldstein. She's the president of the California State Parks Foundation. Elizabeth, good morning as well.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, General Jackson, you've been on the job for enough time now to have made certain changes. How much progress do you think you've made?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're in a, you know, your introduction, you know, painted a bleak picture from 2012. And I have to tell the public, we're in a much better place today in the first days of spring of 2014. And a lot of hard work from a lot of people in the park system throughout the state of California, our partners like the California State Park Foundation. A lot of people have put in a lot of hard work to put us in a better place. And, for example, I'll tell you that one of the things when I first got here, we didn't have park unit budgeting where we could actually show the people how much it costs to run each park. Well, we've produced that, and we've got a consistent budgeting process now. We have answered all of the auditors and all of the investigative reports and made all of the corrections to how we handle the people's money, and that's a good thing. And further, you know, the governor has stabilized parks budget for this upcoming fiscal year in his proposed budget. And in addition to that, you know, we have quite a maintenance backlog, and the governor has $100 million in his overall budget for maintenance throughout the state, various state agencies, and $40 million of that is directed for California state parks.
So it sounds like some progress has been made. Do you agree with that assessment, Ken Wiseman, as the outside person brought in to oversee the commission as it looks at the parks? Has significant progress been made?
Absolutely. I think just in the time, the 6 months that we've been here and been able to see that progress and the things that the general's been able to put in place. But we still need to give he and his team the tools to get the job done. They are still woefully inadequately.
What do you see as still being woeful? I mean, the consultants that you have hired and brought in a report a few months ago still indicated that there were problems with how maintenance was prioritized, with still some problems with the accounting system. So what specifically remains to be done?
Well, I think, and having spent 40 years in private and public, the accounting system that the general and his team have is just really not helpful at all. I mean, that's why it was able to hide $20 million, but it's not – the general has done a lot with his team to work in getting accounting, but it's not the accounting system that most enterprises would have.
And so why is that so hard to change?
Well, I think part of that is just the neglect from a state standpoint, and it's not just parks. There are other departments that have the same challenge where you have not invested in modern technology. You're still doing paper time cards. These are things the Parks Department needs the tools so they can go the next 150 years. And so a lot of our report is coming out about how do we give them those tools? What things can we do in the short term and long term to help the general and his team? And we work very closely in trying to identify, for example, the maintenance that he referred to. I think the governor was able to give $40 million on the basis they knew that the general had already put into place the zero-based budgeting that FTI, our consultants, had recommended. That's already in process. So the process is improving, but it still needs a lot more support.
I want to talk more about the maintenance issue in particular and also the role of nonprofits that we'll ask Elizabeth Goldstein to chime in on in a moment. But I guess I want to get a clearer understanding of why this is so hard, General Jackson. I mean, if the problem is you have an antiquated accounting system, you know, I don't know anything about running a state bureaucracy, obviously, but it wouldn't seem to me that hard to change your accounting system. What makes that such a difficult enterprise?
Well, you have to invest in technology and people. And and unless you're budgeted to modernize your, Ken just mentioned that we have, people use paper time cards, and that is not a modern 21st century way to track personnel hours and things like that. So, and it takes time. You can't come in a single year and go through a whole budgetary process, et cetera, and buy the necessary equipment and training to get yourself catch up with 25 years of innovation.
Why does it take so long to initiate something which would seem as reasonably simple, Ken Wiseman, as having an electronic time card? I understand anything takes time, and yet it seems like some things like that should be able to be achieved, I'm sure not just for the State Parks Department, but across state bureaucracy.
Well, as Director Jackson said, it is committing the resources and making that a priority. There are state procurement policies that slow things down. But we're hoping with the Parks Forward Commission that we can come out with recommendations to the governor and the legislature saying, let's do this quickly. Let's put it in legislation. Let's put it on fast forward so we can really get past the traditional year or two delay. Because we've identified what needs to be done. Now let's just figure out how to get it done in an expedited manner.
And are you confident, Ken Wiseman, and then to you, General Jackson, that despite the obstacles that remain in terms of putting the right systems in place and devoting the appropriate resources to do them, that for now at least things are being tracked better, that we know where the money is going, that we know how much it costs to run Park A versus Park B, sort of fundamental things that weren't in place before. Are those now in place?
They are, and we need to put them better in place with more detail, but we are moving forward, and that's the exciting news, and we've got a lot more opportunity. The Parks employees and management have done amazing things without a lot of support, and I think that's, for example, one thing I found last week with a group of maintenance people, that the authorities to fix a piece of equipment are at $375, been over 20 years, and then you have to go out to bid. The amount of time that management spends doing that, we need to fix that quickly.
Elizabeth Goldstein, let me bring you into our conversation in terms of what you see from a nonprofit standpoint, because these complexities that we're describing have also made it more difficult to forge the kinds of relationships that you've been interested in promoting between nonprofit organizations and the way that they can help support the park systems. From your perspective, because for a while at least, nonprofits were helping kind of keep the doors open at the state parks. Has progress been made? Is there a more collaborative relationship, an easier relationship to put those sorts of partnerships in place?
Well, let me start with the most important thing, and that is that's better, and that is that parks are open. And that is not to be missed in this discussion, is that, 2 years ago at this time, we were anticipating massive closures all across the system, and they do not exist in March of 2014. And that is a victory for all of us as citizens first. And then to speak to your partnership question, I think I want to remind everybody who's out there listening that there are many nonprofit organizations and local governments and other kinds of partners who are helping the department keep those parks open now. They stepped in during the crisis of 2012, and the department has done an amazing job to leverage their work and the donations that they've garnered to help keep parks open through their matching grant program. That's made a huge amount of difference. It's kind of really cemented the collaborations that are happening all across the state between nonprofit organizations and, frankly, local governments and state parks as well. And that is really change the dynamics. I don't think these relationships are without their bumps right now, but I do think that there's some amazing work getting done out there between the department and their local partners, which is forging some models that will be critical to learn from as we go forward.
And so, Elizabeth Goldstein, is the idea of nonprofits playing a role in keeping parks open, running parks, is that something that you see as a model for the future, not just as a kind of emergency maneuver to keep the doors open, but something that ought to be maintained going forward?
Well, I think it should be part of the picture. I don't think it should be the only answer by any means. The state, meaning the legislators and the other elected officials, need to step up and support this park system with public resources. But there's no question that nonprofits have been a part of the mix in sustaining the park system ever really. For 150 years, this idea of nonprofits being engaged with their state park system is not new, and I'm sure the general can speak to that in even more color than I can. But so I do feel as though a lot of what we're learning from the partnerships which emerged from the park closure crisis, in fact, do point some directions, both things we can do and things we shouldn't do for the future. But they are only a part of the picture; they are not the whole picture. And there has to be public funding in this park system to support the public part of the public-private partnership. You can't have that without public support.
Right. Elizabeth Goldstein, the president of the California State Parks Foundation. We'd like to open up our phone lines and take a few calls because we only have General Jackson with us for the first half hour of our program. If you have a question for the parks chief, General Anthony Jackson, do call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, and we'll try to get a couple of in before he has to leave us. General Jackson, then, your priorities right now, we haven't talked much yet about the whole maintenance question, which has been such a key problem for the parks. Do you have now priorities in mind for where that backlog can be addressed and the new money that's coming in? What will be the first come, first served on that list of maintenance needs?
Well, yes, we do have quite a priority list for that. And let me tell you that the maintenance backlog is estimated to be just a little over $1 billion. And so the first thing and probably most important is that we address mission critical projects. That is the projects that support the state park mission, that is to keep parks operating. If a project were to not be done and it would force the closure of a park, that'll make it rise up very high on our list of things to do. things where a natural or a cultural asset would be threatened. Otherwise, if we thought that, let's say we had a cultural resource that had a 150-year roof on it and a roof was collapsing, and if you lost that, you lose the purpose of the park and you lose the cultural resource. So that would make it rise up to the list, higher on the list. If by not doing a project, you're threatening public health and safety, that is another thing that allows it to push things up on the list. Another thing is within the time, can we do it can we accomplish the task within the amount of time that the budgeted money is available to us? And so it is a kind of a, we're going through that right now, trying to determine, going through a list of several hundred projects, and we're going through and we're trying to come up and in a very rigorous process that will have contributions not just from Parks employees on what's important on that list, but by the we'll be talking with Natural Resources Agencies, the Governor's Office, the legislature. This came up in Senate hearings yesterday, and as well as with the Parks and Recreation Commission. So there's going to be some public input on this, as well as official input from other sources on this. But I hope that answers your question.
Yes. No. Thank you. Let's get a couple of questions to you before you have to leave us. A number of people are lining up who would like to pose questions to you. Let's start with Jim in Fremont. Jim, go ahead.
Hi. I missed the first couple minutes of the show, but what I did hear when I tuned in was a discussion about some budget discrepancies or issues of misspent money, and that was followed up by comments about how we need to modernize to avoid this. And I want to point out something. Modernization and improvement in, building your tech infrastructure, that will dramatically improve efficiency, but it does not resolve budget issues. In fact, it makes the potential for them to be much greater. I mean, it's just a tool, and it's how you use it. It doesn't solve the problem by itself.
Jim, thanks for the observation. Ken Weissman, you want to weigh in on that? It's a useful point that just putting in new software isn't going to fix everything.
It is, but you have to have more tools in the toolbox, and then the right leadership that we have in place. And that's with what we have, we've made progress. We need more tools, and we'll make even more.
So your sense, and I know the commission is not coming out with its full report for another month or so, but if there was a problem before with leadership and tools, your sense is that the progress is being made on the leadership side. Now that leadership team needs the support, that needs the right tools in order to make further progress?
Absolutely. And that a lot of our report will direct that and how we can empower the general and his team to move forward.
Jim, thanks for the call. Richard in Belvedere is up next. Richard, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I'd like to say that General Jackson, we're a bit disappointed in terms of your in keeping faith with the public. On January 16th, of this year, there was held a, quote, public meeting in concerning the Belvedere, the Tiburon Angel Island Ferry. A lot of people attended that. We were assured at that time that all of the letters were sent in and received, the emails by January 31st, will be published on your website. Extensive letters were written and sent to your office. None of those have appeared. There's been no explanation for it. I have written you, Brian Cahill, and Vicki Waters several occasions, never received a response from any of you. That's not the way to maintain the faith of good, with the public.
And Richard, I mean, you're thanks. Losing. Let's see if we can get a response.
Comments.
Yeah, no, we hear you. Let's see what the general has to say.
Yeah, this is what the issue here is whether or not we put a request proposal out for a ferry that runs between Tiburon and Angel Island. And I did not attend that public meeting myself, but I had members of my staff there. And the question, and, one of the things in being a steward of the people's money, when we have concessionaires and that on a regular basis, the contracts are reviewed and renewed, and they have to be put out for bid. That's basically state law. And there has been I've received quite a few letters. And matter of fact, we just sent out a reply, rather official reply, to the public that we are obligated to do a request for proposal to make sure that the state gets the best deal for its resources.
General Jackson, I think what Richard is questioning is your responsiveness, though, whether or not you've responded to his inquiries, whether or not his letter and other letters have been published as on your website, as was apparently, or Richard says was promised at that public meeting. So understand the difficulties in coming to a decision. I think Richard's concern is the responsiveness of your department.
Yeah, well, my response has been published on the website. So if he goes to our public website at California State Parks, he will see my response to that. And, you know, if I got, 100 letters, it is the best way to respond to the people is to have it put on our website.
All right, General Jackson, thanks for that, Richard. Thanks also for the question. General, stay with us. We know we've got you just for a few more minutes, so we're going to try to squeeze in a few more calls if we can. Okay. Natalie joins us next in San Francisco. Natalie.
Yes, I'm deeply concerned about the possibility of fracking in state parks, and I don't know if that's planned or not, but I was hoping somebody could speak to that.
General Jackson.
Yeah, there's no fracking going on in state parks, and I haven't heard of any plans to do that or seen any vision that would propose that.
Natalie, thanks for the question. Let's get in a question from Richard, who joins us next. Richard, go ahead.
Hi. My question is, with the changing demographics in our state today, what is the department doing to make our California state parks more inviting to Latino families, especially those on fixed income? I think fee increases seem to be counterintuitive. Also, the limited access by way of Reserve America locks people out of the reservation system.
Great question, Richard. Thanks for raising it. General Jackson.
Yeah, if you look at my strategic action plan, which I hate keep referring to the website, but it one of the five strategic goals is to make our parks more accessible to all the peoples of California, and that includes our diverse groups. And that's not just Latinos, but also our growing Asian population, as well as all other population groups, because our parks are a great resource that every group can see and get a sense of their own history and be in touch with nature and all the health and education that provides. And so we have been going, we have a tremendous program where we're doing reach out. We're offering grants. I was just down in L.A., Los Angeles last Saturday as we did our golden shovel to start L.A. State Historic Park. The California State Parks Foundation has been reaching out places like Candlestick State Park and Recreation Area, and so we're kind of reaching out into other communities. I've been meeting with both the National Park Service, Bureau of Land Management, and the National Forest Service on how we could collaborate to bring more, get more of our diverse audiences into all of our parks, regardless of whether they're county, state, national, or regional parks. So we have a lot of energy going into that. And we are also providing, through the years, we've provided hundreds of millions of dollars of grants to increase the urban parks throughout the state of California. And so we're still in that process. And we've got to do good because they're our future of our parks and in this regards.
Richard, thanks for the call. General Jackson, we know you have to leave us. Thanks for spending this first part of our program. We're going to continue our discussion after a short break with both Ken Wiseman and Elizabeth Goldstein about where we are with the Parks Department now, what progress has been made, where the parks may head in the year ahead. We'd love to hear your thoughts on that. What's your favorite state park? What are your concerns about its future? You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can post your thoughts or concerns on our website or email them to us as well at kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. More on our discussion about the future of state parks in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the future of California state parks. This year is actually the 150th anniversary of the state park system, and the state parks have been through some bumpy times in recent years, and we want to use this rest of our program to talk about where we are now and where we may head in the future. We're joined by Ken Wiseman, who's the executive director of Parks Forward, which was a state commission set up to analyze and overhaul where the parks were aimed after the difficulties of 2 years ago. Elizabeth Goldstein joins us as well, the president of the California State Parks Foundation. I want to just pick up on where we left off, Elizabeth, with the comments about sort of opening up the parks to a more diverse audience, not only in terms of ethnicity, but there was an article in the paper the other day about a settlement that disability groups had come to with the Golden Gate Recreation Area, obviously a national area. But it talked about how that might need to be a model for the state park system as well. I'm interested in your perspective in terms of someone who works with nonprofits about what could be done to sort of use nonprofits that work with various diverse groups, including those with disabilities, to bring that to open up the parks to a wider population.
This is such an important issue. I was really glad that it got raised. If the California State Park System is going to be a robust system going into the future, it is going to have to be a system that all of the citizens of California feel passionately about. And so connecting Californians to their state parks is really one of the fundamental issues facing all of us as we work into the future for state parks. And I know that Parks Forward is spending time on this, and we certainly as a nonprofit organization are as well. I'll just give you an example of one of the things that we've done that the general alluded to, and that is we're working on a big capital project here in the Bay Area in Bayview Hunters Point, and are working with a local nonprofit organization to actually engage teens and young adults in the actual growing of the plants for that wetlands restoration project. And that has meant reaching out to the African American community and to the Latino community here and engaging them in the actual work of restoring a state park. Now, that's one tiny little example. I think there needs to be much more extensive work across all kinds of platforms, whether that's marketing platforms, helping people understand how to use parks well. People who have never used a park before obviously need more information about how to encounter a state park safely and well and really enjoy it to its fullest, more than people who are regular users to state parks. So there's a real information gap here that needs to be filled with information in many languages and accessible through not only the internet and kind of technical resources, but also outreach specifically into communities, reaching specific community groups that might bring seniors from particular neighborhoods, et cetera. These are all things that need to be happening to really engage Californians in their state parks.
And yet, Ken Wiseman, that's also going to take that many more resources. I mean, we've talked about the fact that you're getting more money. The State Parks Department will get more money for some of its long-deferred maintenance projects. But this important intention of widening who can come into the park system is also going to take money. I mean, if you're going to make things more wheelchair accessible or in post signs in different languages, where's that going to come from?
I think that Elizabeth alluded earlier that we have to invest a core amount in things where it can only come probably from government. Although you talk about the Golden Gate model, they raise as much money in that nonprofit as the federal budget does to do things like help with these projects and to enhance visitor experiences. They started by making Alcatraz more friendly to tours and used that as a revenue base that they were able to generate more for the park. Those kind of opportunities exist in our system as well.
And in your consulting report, one of the things they talked about was taking advantage more of opportunities that in places that are sort of prime spots where you do get lots of traffic, there aren't enough concession stands, that there needs to be more done to sort of capitalize, to use a word that probably people don't want to really necessarily think about in terms of the park, but have to capitalize on those opportunities to take advantage and market them more aggressively.
Right. And I think we haven't done as good a job of marketing not only what parks are available, but the good things that are going on in parks. The general alluded to the hundreds of millions that have been put into local parks, which is where people that are underserved. And that's one thing we've seen. We have major urban areas, there just aren't any parks. And one of our commissioners says an urban park is the gateway to health because it's – and he's a physician, the head of Sutter Health in the East Bay, saying this is the way we change people's attitudes. They move around. They lose weight. They get off of diabetes medication because they get out in a park.
Which means there also has to be that much more importance attached to sort of getting the ship straight and getting the record-keeping part of this straight. And there's some people who are writing in expressing bewilderment about why this is so difficult. Ken writes in, as an average citizen, listening to bureaucrats try to explain why something as simple and common and routine as electronic time cards is so difficult really scares me. What chance do these folks have of managing our beloved parks? Frankly, it sounds like we have to clean house and upgrade the personnel further. Ken Weissman.
Well, I don't want to put I am not one of the parks bureaucrats, but I have been a bureaucrat in government, and I hate the term that denigrates in that sense, because that's not how we're going to turn it around. We have a lot of fabulous people in parks that just need help. And I understand, because having been 30 years in the private sector where I could make things move, the general used to say, you know, take that hill. It was done. It doesn't work that way in government, and we have to acknowledge that, but we can improve it. We have a governor right now who's very into governing and is moving things at rapid pace and is ready to do that with parks as well. So we need to give the direction and the options so he and the legislature can pick that up and do what citizens look at and say, gee, why don't we have IT in parks? That's also very relevant as to that new customer that Elizabeth was talking about. It's a Latino millennial who's connected with IT. If we don't respond to those, we're not going to make parks relevant. So we have to allocate our resources there and make it relevant for the future.
Sounds sort of anomalous, but in a way you're saying you want people to go to the state parks but still be able to look at their screens, right?
Well, I have two millennials in my home. I mean, if you can't connect to it, it doesn't exist.
Here's another question, and then we'll move on. But another one about this question is what quantitative benchmarks are there for the state park system to make it more efficient? Too often, these government bureaucracies have zero measurable goals by which to measure their performance. Is that something that you're going to be recommending? Are there very specific standards benchmarks that the Parks Department will have to hit?
We're looking for those. What should those be? And the general and his strategic plan starts down that path, but there has to be metrics, and there has to be the ability to keep track of them. State Parks doesn't even really know who comes to visit them. There is not a system to keep track of. I mean, just until recently, they weren't able to start taking credit cards, so it was all cash. Those are the kind of things that we need to improve and then say, okay, measure the improvement and say, yes, we've come this far, and that's across the board.
And if you'd like to read, by the way, General Jackson's strategic plan for the state parks, we've got a link posted on our website at forum at kqed.org. So if you'd like to read more about what's in that plan, you can find it there. Let's get back to our calls. Bill joins us next in Woodside. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I wonder if they're considering revisiting the blanket ban on dogs in state parks. There are millions of Californians with pets who are responsible pet owners, and you're losing a lot of revenue. There's a park within 5 miles of my home that I don't go to because I'm not allowed to take my pet.
All right. So increasing park diversity by allowing more four-legged creatures.
And Bill, that is a huge issue. We've heard it throughout the state when we've done our workshops. It's also when we did our research on who this future customer is, this millennial. They're 3 times more or 2.7 times more likely to have a pet. And so for parks to be relevant, we really need to look at that policy because we've heard it from people. I think obviously, the issue of off-leash is a separate issue, but I think on-leash dogs are something that has to be looked at to keep parks relevant.
Elizabeth Goldstein, I know this isn't really yours to make decisions about, but there's also been concern that's been voiced about just the cost of the parks and that they seem to be sort of out of whack with what it costs to go to other recreational places, that the annual pass at a state park, for example, is more than the annual pass for a national park. Do you think more needs to be done in that area to sort of have different adjustments in the pricing structure or have a special pass that could only be available for certain parks in your region that would be less than if you want to go to every state park in the state? What might be thought of in a creative way like that?
Well, I do think that the department has actually gone a little bit of a good distance in this regard. There's actually many more passes now, annual passes, than there used to be, many more products. So if someone hasn't looked recently at these, I urge you to do that because there's more flexibility and different kinds of passes now in the system than there used to be. And to your broad point, though, I do want to speak to this. I mean, fees and entrance fees to state parks are obviously an incredibly important issue, and they have to be balanced between access and revenue. These two things are not, you can't just maximize revenue and pretend that that's not going to have impacts on access, especially for our poorer citizens in the state of California. So there has to be balance between those two things so that we can achieve maximum access while at the same time not leaving, you know, revenues that could help the state park system take care of itself either. And, you know, I think the department has actually been doing some fairly careful testing of demand pricing in different parks. I actually think that there ought to be kind of a fee policy for state parks that's more comprehensive than they currently have. But I think that they're certainly thinking about this issue very effectively. And I think from a citizen perspective, we have to insist that they do that because it's so important.
It's an interesting point. I mean, if you think about how entertainment goes now generally, there's demand pricing. If you want to buy a ticket to the Giants versus Dodgers, it costs different than Giants versus, you know, the Houston Astros or whoever is at the bottom of the league at any given point. Is that something you ought to think about, Ken Weissman?
Oh, absolutely. No, Elizabeth is absolutely right. And I think there have been some, especially at the Southern California beaches where there's a huge demand and trying to understand how can we use electronics to, for example, you park using your smartphone and you don't have – it helps in enforcement. We had a demonstration last week. We were at the Presidio doing a work group and a fabulous technology that one of the superintendents has been able to adapt theirs.
Here's a point that Mike writes, which I have to acknowledge is a pet peeve of mine as well. He writes, whenever we go to our favorite park, we find that people park outside the gate to save the parking fee. Whenever I go to Point Lobos Reserve, which is a lovely, lovely, lovely spot, I feel like I'm the only guy driving in because everyone else is parked on the outside and then walks in. I mean, I don't know what that's about, but it's that's a problem.
It is a problem, and I'll let Elizabeth talk because she has more history in this than I. But it's also, too, one of the things that parks have frustrated people, they weren't able to take credit cards at the gate. And one of the things that we're doing is make sure there's people at the gate that can take credit cards, and that increases revenue just so people – the free rider issue is those that want to come into the parks have had issues, or it's been a honor system. And I think there's we've heard your complaint off throughout these work – groups and focus groups we've had around the state about you need to pay your share. And
yeah. What do you think about that, Elizabeth? I mean, I know I, at the risk of my sounding sort of old, grumpy, and judgmental, well, I just did. So there you are.
Well, I'm apparently old, grumpy, and disgruntled as well because I share your concern. I do think it's interesting when you look at the patterns of use of state parks. When the fees went lower, admissions went much higher. They grew very substantially. As prices go up, attendance at state parks plummets. And I have to believe that that's not because less people are going to state parks. It's that more people are doing what you're describing, Dave, and that is that they're parking outside and hiking in different ways. Parks are poorest places all across the state, and there's multiple ways to access them, and I think people vote with their feet, so to speak, when the fees get too high. I do think Ken's point about the technology, I've certainly been standing at one of those Iron Rangers and not had exact change for paying my parking fee and wanting to pay my parking fee and not being able to do it is very frustrating. So I'm sure that's going on too. But I do think every single one of those people who's parking outside should remember that even at its most expensive, California state parks are a cheap date, and they are your contributions help maintain them and make sure that they're marvelous places. So go pay your fee.
Back to our calls. Joe in Sacramento is up next. Joe, go ahead, please.
Hey there. I just wanted to comment about how I just think it's kind of sick that State Park exploits seasonal workers the way they do when management seems top-heavy. And, yeah, and they just, I heard they just bought about 1,000 new guns for about $1 million. So I just wonder, you know, where's the room for the little guy?
Okay, let's see if we can get an answer. Concern about whether or not seasonal workers are treated fairly, get the right kind of benefits. Ken Wiseman.
It's something we've heard about throughout our state, and Joe is right. And many seasonal workers that want to become permanent workers, the system has not been as open and accessible as it could be. Those seasonal workers are the backbone of collecting fees and keeping parks clean. But there is a system that's I think, broken as far as giving them opportunity to become permanent. And that's something that we've been asked to look at and will. I think the core is how you're met at the park by somebody that's keeping it clean and a happy employee. So that is definitely on the radar.
Bob writes in, I work with a nonprofit association in Benicia, and we help at two state parks, Benicia State Recreation Area and Benicia Capital State Historic Park. While we've been given responsibility to assist with the operation of the parks, we have not been given the authority to undertake the project. The state bureaucracy makes it impossible to carry out small, under $10,000 capital improvements. Will the Parks Forward project be looking at ways to give the nonprofits the authority to carry out needed projects in state parks? This is a fascinating question. I mean, because there are people who want to help out, yet because presumably they're not state employees, they don't have authority to do certain things. How do you make that happen?
And it's not just Bob and his group that want to do things. It's if you're a park manager, your authority is only $5,000. It's been that for 30 years. That's crazy. You need to let management go out, and they run million-dollar budgets, yet they have to go out to bid over $5,000, or they can't turn to a nonprofit and give them permission. The Benicia Park is a great example of a group that wants to do things, and they hit headquarters, and the answer is no. And that we hear that more and more. So we think it's a great opportunity to empower partnerships like the Benicia folks. But there has to be the right connection between state parks managing the asset and when a nonprofit group of friends wants to come in and manage it. There are certain things that you have to turn to the superintendent and say, okay, that's within my realm. But it's like a landlord or a marriage, as many of these partnerships kind of came together under duress during the crisis. Some hastily arranged marriage has worked better than others.
Yeah. Elizabeth, I'd be curious to get your perspective on this. I'm sure you've advocated for this. I wish General Jackson would still be with us to answer the question, because it would seem like something that would make a lot of sense and that could presumably be done without necessarily going through tons of bureaucratic or legislative processes.
Well, I think to your point, it is absolutely essential that we figure out how to use our partnerships really, really effectively. When you have people stepping up, as the Benicia folks have and others have in parks all across the state, you don't want to frustrate them, first of all. I mean, just on the basic level, these are people who are giving of their time, energy, and money, and you want them to have that experience be an extraordinary experience so that they're likely to continue doing that. So just at a very basic human level, you don't want that to happen. But you also want to take advantage of these partnerships and allow them to do the things that they do best. So being able to intervene and doing a small capital project that might take the department a much longer period of time, you want to facilitate that. And these are the things, you know, these are some of the bumps in the road that I was referring to earlier. I think with good minds on these problems, they absolutely can be solved. But I do think it's not just about the department. It's about their control agencies, too, and the people that oversee their work. Those organizations, whether that's the Department of Finance or DGS, the Department of General Services in the state, you know, they tend to have a very they micromanage these projects. They micromanage the department, to Ken's point, and they're certainly passing on rules that are perhaps more detailed than they need to be for efficient work between nonprofits and state.
Sorry to interrupt, Elizabeth. I wonder if there might be an analogy here to what's happening in education, Ken Wiseman. The state just passed big retooling of how education is funded in this state, which not only directs more money, but my comparison is this. It also gives local school districts a lot more autonomy to make decisions. And there's less prescribed funding for you must do this, you must do that. State local districts now will have a lot more responsibility to make their own decisions about where their money is going. Could that model not also apply to state parks?
It could. And we've had many suggest in our meetings to the in public workshops that indeed, more local control to empower local management to work with local groups and get things done without the obstacles that Sacramento has.
Is that something you're going to recommend in your report?
It is definitely on the table. Our report is still – we've assembled all of this information and opportunities, and there's I think the commission is looking – right now to look at what are the short-term opportunities that we really focus and make the most amount difference, and then what are the long-term opportunities. But I think this is very much one that we've heard throughout the state would be a positive, much very much like the education.
Spector calls. John in Timber Cove. Anyway, an appropriate name for someone who wants to call and talk about state parks. John, go ahead.
Hi. Fort Ross State Historic Park, which contains the oldest wooden structure in California, has received considerable funding by Russian oligarch Viktor Vekselberg and his Renova Foundation. Vekselberg has been reported to be targeted by the United States for sanctions, as well as Renova. So I'm wondering if there is any kind of contingency plan to take up the slack for the Russian money that has been supporting Fort Ross, and if there's a threat that the Rutschev House, the oldest building, will go back to its deplorable conservation.
John, thank you. That's like the best question I've heard in a while. I have to say, I never thought our conversation about state parks would find its way back to Crimea, but here we are. Ken Weissman.
Well, and it's relevant, and maybe we can talk to the president about an exemption for the good money versus the bad money. But that is living in real time for sure.
Any knowledge on that, Elizabeth? About where what's going on at Fort Ross?
Well, I don't have we're all watching the Crimea situation unfold as quickly as it is for John as well. And I think there isn't yet a contingency plan because we don't know quite how this is going to play out. But to his point, Fort Ross has been a cause for international concern as it was originally on the closure list. And as he points out, the Renova Foundation actually created something called the Fort Ross Renova Foundation, which has been brought a lot of money to both the Fort Ross Conservancy, the local nonprofit organization, which does incredible work up there. And, there is a lot of scholarship that's going back and forth between Russia and the United States around Fort Ross, which is incredibly exciting. And there's no question that there's going to be impacts. We're going to have to figure out how the Crimea situation plays out. But no plan yet, because it's all unfolding as quickly for the rest of us as it is for your caller.
There's a question from Antoine who writes, I'm concerned about the level of transparency that will possibly be lacking with the new nonprofit status. I suspect where he's going there with Elizabeth is that if nonprofits get more involved, that they may not be subject to the same sort of transparency rules as the state is.
Well, that is a totally reasonable concern. And most nonprofit organizations actually do a lot of work. And those of us in the parks world are very sensitive to this issue and certainly work hard to be as transparent about our own work, whether that's associated with an operation in a park or not, as we can. But I do think that there's transparency issues broadly around state parks. And it's not really just an issue for state parks. It's an issue for California state government. In general, there are not a lot of mechanisms for the citizen, the average engaged citizen, to understand, for instance, the budget process and how it gets developed, how that flows down to a particular park. So I want to endorse the concern about making sure that there's transparency for both the department and all of its partners, whoever they are. That's a perfectly reasonable question. These are public assets, and the public should be able to understand how they're being operated and how decisions are being made around those operations.
Let's squeeze in one more call. Sage in Los Altos. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I would love to see a lot of educated boomers, retired scientists, biologists, a variety of people, including constitutional attorneys, volunteer at their state parks and become the people that don't have to be caught up in the fees and once we went from Ranger Rick to Police Paul and we bulldozed the Jules Feiffer mansion into the ocean and lots of other things were done in parks without people's knowledge. The resource is tremendous. Putting in additional cement and additional garbage cans when we can sit around a table and say, let's just ban takeout food, okay, in the park, carry out your own garbage, bring your own pooper scooper, whatever the case may be, instead of a controlling bureaucracy that uses it even for HS exercises and keeps the people out.
Let me hold you there, Sage, just because we're short on time, but we take your point. Let me use it as well as one last email to get a last comment from Elizabeth and Ken about, garnering more public support. And let me read this email to go along with what Sage says. Steve writes, "We the people lost our right to complain about state parks in 2010 when Proposition 21 was defeated. If we had fully funded parks and made the admission fee for Californians more reasonable, we'd be better off. I'm amazed when I think that was not passed." So, Elizabeth, the last quick comment about just garnering more public support when we have this history in California of not necessarily supporting it at the ballot box.
Well, there's been lots of themes in this discussion today, from connections to emerging communities in California to the failure of Prop 21 to the need to engage more volunteers, both for fundraising as well as for all kinds of other activities that are so essential. This park system will never have another 150 years unless the citizens of the state of California engage in making sure that it is the robust, extraordinary place that we inherited. And I just can't say this often enough. If we as citizens don't take an interest in these places, we'll have failed.
Yeah. Yeah. Ken Weissman, last thought.
Funding mechanisms are a big thing on our agenda to talk about long term. What do we do for the next funding and how do we make sure that that's relevant and valuable to the citizens of the future?
And your recommendations come out when?
We will have a draft report out April 30th.
And it will have a connection to Russian oligarchs and how that will save California State Parks?
That's still in pencil.
Ken Weissman at State Parks Forward, Elizabeth Goldstein, California State Parks Foundation. Thank you both. Thanks also to General Anthony Jackson, who joined us earlier in the program. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Danny Bringer is our engineer, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for coverage of California state parks are provided by the S.D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation. Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.